You're watching Fanboy Versus with your hosts, JD Church, Chris McFeely, and Chris Triplett.
And you are listening to Fanboy Versus. I am your host, JD. Today, joined by Chris McFeely and Nicole Hale. Welcome.
Hello.
Hello. So, Triplett's out. I'm not sure why.
Bad Chinese food.
That's what we do. Today it is Fanboy versus Tiger Blood. As yes, that's right. We've got Tiger Blood going. So we've got some reviews. We got some stuff coming up. We're going to be talking about Secret Six at the end of the show because, frankly, we're just damn tired of talking about Brightest Day.
Never get tired of talking about Secret Six, though.
But we never get tired of talking about Secret Six, and there's the start of a new story arc, which is just Secret Six, which looks really exciting. So it's no crossover stuff. It's no one-shot stuff. I'm pretty excited. Yay. So, news. McFeely, sir.
It's all over the place news-wise this week. It's almost like casting news. Liz Hurley is going to play the villain in Wonder Woman.
I always thought it was Yules.
I could see it. Well, either whoever he was the dude in the Princess Bride.
He's the dude in Saw.
Probably a more modern. Yes, no.
Yeah, I mean, there's other things that he's done, I'm sure.
Probably, Princess but I couldn't Bride. Tell you what they were.
Princess Bride.
He's allegedly, maybe he's in the cast, maybe going to play the love interest in the series. We know that Tom Hiddleston's going to be reprising his role as Loki for the Avengers movie, playing the villain in that.
I'm so glad they announced it. I go yay as well,
because Loki and Avengers and everything, but I haven't seen him yet, so I don't know to go yay. I feel
they got
wrong.
Loki, though, they finally announced it because they were talking about maybe being someone else, being the villain, so I was like, it's going to be good.
Yeah.
Nothing wrong with somebody else being the villain, but it shows they're definitely having respect for the comics if they're going for Loki first.
Yeah, it doesn't get any more classic than that. I mean, that's pretty much it right there.
Other movie news, we got our first proper look at the Red Skull.
Woo-hoo.
That looks good. He looks beautiful.
A little bit of a fan chub there. It was really... let me tell you.
That was awesome. Captain America, I think I've said it before, has been one that's kind of slid in under my radar, really, because I haven't been able to see beyond Thor for a very long time. But the closer we get now, the more... Certainly the more news we're getting. Because Captain America was one there was not a lot of news leaked out about at all. They sat on a lot of the stuff to do with that film. But, yeah, the more I see it, I still definitely rank them... Most interested in Thor, then Green Lantern, then Captain America. We'll see how it goes. But Thor is...
Yeah.
No X-Men in there? No X-Men, huh?
X-Men would come after all of those three. Yeah. Although, you know, we said it before. The trailer, hey, doesn't actually look too bad. What happened there?
It looks good. I can't hate it.
It's going to be a busy summer.
I'm already, trying to...
I'm ready for it.
X-Men, Transformers, and then Cap. In, like, God. A 3 month
I'm going to be given, BJ's behind the theater, trying to get enough money to watch all these movies.
You could actually make more money by recording it and putting it up on the internet.
Ooh, that's a good idea.
There you go. That'll pay for your next ticket.
And I don't have to do anything. I can't tell my mother.
I'm not touching that one.
You're not paying him. She's not paying him.
So, moving right along. what else we got?
In real comics news, DC
have
finally...
love the real comic news, right?
So it's nice to have it on a comics podcast. DC have lifted the veil of secrecy over some of their Flashpoint miniseries.
Ah, and so what do we have out of that? I didn't...
Covers and creative teams. I've got the list here in front of me, so I'm just going to read this off a minute. Okay. We have got...
I'm by Legion winning. Of... I win here and I win there. Now what?
Nice.
Our lovely producer jumping in there.
Yes.
That's why it's nice to have a
taking
producer.
Us all off guard.
Oh, Charlie Sheen. It's epic. They need to make a comic book about him.
Oh, it's already in the works. I can tell you.
Yeah, I've seen enough comedy Charlie Sheen images this week.
There was one I saw that was on Topless Robot, I think, that was like him with Betty and Veronica or something.
Yeah.
Archie.
I saw one of him with the Sword of Omens going, "Tiger, tiger, tiger blood, ho!"
Nice.
Just that one, dig it.
That's a good one. I like that.
Yes, it's the zeitgeist in it. Legion of Doom is our first one, written by Adam Glass with art by Rodney Buscemi and Joe Marzan. Whatever happened to the world's greatest supervillains? On the cover, well, it's kind of a shadowed figure, but I'm thinking it's Heatwave from The Flash, because it's a shadowed figure that seems to have his hood and goggles shrouded in fire. What looks to be the old Legion of Doom undersea headquarters in the background there. What do we got here next was Emperor Aquaman by Tony Bedard and Ardian Siaf. He will drown the world, then rule it! World of Flashpoint by Rex Ogle and Paolo Sequeira. Discover the World of Flashpoint is simply the tagline for that. It seems to show Aquaman and Wonder Woman fighting in the ruins of London, because that seems to be Big Ben on them. What's this next one? Hal Jordan by Adam Schlagman and Ben Oliver. He Never Got the Ring is the tagline. Dead Man and the Flying Graysons by J.T. Kroll and Mike Janin, which is a rather fun cover of Dead Man upside down in chains over crocodiles. it's a real carnival poster style of cover with a rather Nightwing looking Dick Grayson in there as a little sidebar on it. What else we got? Batman Night of Vengeance by Brian Azzarello and Eduardo Risso, which is I think probably the creative team of note here, I would say. The tagline is The Night of Vengeance. The image, it goes along with that thing we heard about Wayne Casinos in the promotional material, because it's Batman, there's a pair of dice and a target on the cover. Citizen Cold, we'd heard about, written and drawn by Scott Collins. He loves someone he shouldn't, is the tag on that one. Deathstroke and the Curse of the Ravager by Jimmy Palmiotti with art by Joe Bennett. He will stop at nothing to find his lost treasure. And that is everything we've seen so far, and that is 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 of the 14 announced so far that we have covers and teasers
for.
So are they doing like 2 a week?
God knows. They haven't announced any kind of release dates for these. I would actively have to hope that these are not all going to launch at once.
Oh, no.
They'll be staggered, I'm sure.
I mean, but I would assume Flashpoint is probably going to be 7 or 8 months long anyway. So if these can be, if these are only hopefully 3 issues or so, if they do the Blackest Night, because Blackest Night was a very well-structured crossover. He had 3 minis, month off, 3 minis, basically, as far as the tie-ins went. But there's still an awful lot of tie-ins. And, you know, if I'm completely honest, I've yet to see anything that I think I'll be picking up out of this list of minis. Dead Man and the Flying Graysons looks to be the most fun, but it's written by J.T. Kroll, who I have not enjoyed a single piece of work by. I haven't read much by him, but I haven't liked his Titans or his Teen Titans. And Night of Vengeance sounds like a solid one, with solid creative team on it, but I don't feel particularly drawn to it. I'd say Citizen Cold is probably the one that grabs my attention, because I like Scott Collins, but I don't think I've ever seen him write anything. But it's the Rogues, and it's Scott Collins. So I'll probably check that one out.
Do they have different artists on each one?
Yes, everyone has a different artist. The second names in all of those things I read are the artists.
Okay.
None of them have covers by anybody. Only some of them have covers by their interior artist as well. They list the individual covers here, but I didn't bother reading them off because, yeah. Yeah, I would say probably Batman is the one with the highest profile creative team, but Jimmy Palmiotti's on Deathstroke, but I'll be frank with you, I'd be hard-pressed to identify most of the other writers, and I don't think that's ever a good sign whenever it comes to miniseries tie-ins with an event. You know, when they're written by nobody you've heard of, it tends to reek of unimportance. I don't know. I may be having just some kind of automatic overreaction to the rather ridiculous amount of them that are coming out, you know, and maybe just some kind of inversely proportional and targeted at them for bringing out so many. I'm not usually that guy, but 14.
That's a lot. I mean, that's really a lot.
It sounds like one that would be good in trade. Sounds like one that would be good in trade.
I'm just not going to get all the tie-ins. I could, you know, I'll probably get the main title and I'll probably get, you know, maybe the tie-in for something that I'm actually interested in. But especially considering that it seems like, and the booster, I mean, there should be a booster tie-in, you know. I'll be reading Booster, which is supposed to be part of it and stuff.
Booster. That's the thing.
I don't
know how these are working. I mean, the idea of this being an Age of Apocalypse style thing with these supplanting regular books is looking far less likely at this point.
Yeah.
Purely because what the hell would the half of these actually supplant?
Yeah. Yeah. So, because
it's like just a load of packed schedules that will ultimately hamper everyone's buying.
And then we'll
people will look at it. I'll probably check out Citizen Cool. That's all I can say out of these eight so far. But we got another 7 to find out. So we'll see how it goes.
Yeah.
That's my sailings on it anyway. And I believe that is about all the news this week. So that wasn't overly positive, was it?
Well, that was great. Always good to start on an upbeat note. No, I mean, like I said, I mean, I'm excited about the Flashpoint event itself.
Yeah.
I mean, the story sounds interesting. But I'm not, you know, like I said, when it gets into a bunch of tie-ins and minis and stuff, that just is oh, really, please. I think Brightest Day has been actually done fairly well, at least in that respect, because it's just kind of been under the radar as far as that. The story's been there, the other elements have been there, but it's not been something that has taken a lot of, oh, I have to buy all of this extra stuff to understand what's going on. You know, the only thing, the only thing I could be getting that I'm not that would tie in would be, JSA? Then that's the only, or JLA or something. That's the only thing I'm not getting. So I don't know what the hell's going on with Jade, other than apparently she's still alive. So
neither do I. I don't know either.
So, and I just don't care but that much either. So that helps. That helps a lot. So
okay, yeah, it hasn't been too bad with the. We'll just have to see. I'm definitely excited for the core Flashpoint thing itself because I've seen it being seeded slowly over the last year and a half, and it's Jeff Jones or Andy Kubert. It'll be a decent book. It's just the out-of-control nature of the thing. You know, it's like I look at it and I think, that was probably just supposed to be, much like Blackest Night was just supposed to be a Green Lantern story, I look at this and imagine it probably began life as just a Flash story that's grown out of control. But Blackest Night, as I said, was a very well-structured comic book. Crossover, just as a crossover, you had the first month, and there was the Tales of the Core tie-in. You had the second, third, fourth months, three-issue miniseries. You had the skip month in the middle, where they brought back all of the one-shot dead comics months. The next 3 months, I've lost count. The next 3 months, the next three-issue miniseries, and the last month was just the last issue, and that was it. It was very well organized, whereas this looks poised to run out of control.
Mm-hmm.
No pun intended, but Flashpoint. Ha ha, run. Ah.
Yeah. They also, I don't know, one thing I'll mention is that they put in the back of all the DC issues this month, they put the, or at least this week, they put the chalkboard. Because, I mean, while I loved, you know, the end of Flashpoint, no one else read it, and they actually
Time Masters.
The Time Masters Flashpoint. So it was kind of like, since you probably didn't read this,
it seems really like a chalkboard. Tacit admission of the fact, doesn't it?
Yeah. Oh, well. It was good stuff. We love you, Dan. We interviewed Dan Juergens.
Yeah.
Should go download that. Anyway, okay. So
wasn't that long ago?
No, it was just a few weeks ago. He's really great. He was drawing one of the issues of Booster Gold while we talked to him. Anyway, Nicole. I guess we'll go to Nicole first.
I think me. Hi.
Triplet.
Yes. Triplet.
Not here.
Skip town to flip at that.
Okay, well, I guess I'll start off with what's becoming a trend of mine. I'm picking up a new series. This is a brand new series that's coming out. It's called Intrepids. Put that up there. The tagline is, mad scientists are a disease, meet the cure. So there's a bunch of mad scientists in here. And it starts off introducing the main character. Her name's Crystal. She's going to be our heroine. And talks about how she's had a bad childhood. And she had to get away from her parents. And so this gentleman came into her life. Sounds kind of creepy, but it's not. His name is Dexter. And he came and took her away from all this bad stuff. And he's making her into this super secret agent with all these crazy skills. It's almost your typical, almost like any kind of action flick story. So it starts off with that flashback. And they did a really good job with the flashbacks anytime because they put it into this red and amber coloring. So you always know that it's a flashback sequence. But they do a good job with that. And then their story continues with the team going into their first mission where they're trying to discover what this one scientist is doing. So you've got pretty much the A-team. There's four of them there. So they're going into this laboratory to get everything figured out. So you've got the hacker who's trying to get them in, but they're coming across problems with hacking into their system. So they get caught. Oh, no. as soon as they get in there, they realize what the experiment's doing. And, of course, they're doing experiments with animals and robotics. So that's what they come up against is called Cyber Bear.
Okay, this is running pretty good already.
I love Cyber Bear. This is so cool. And so they have to battle out this Cyber Bear. And then...
Wow. Is this treated with any degree of comedy?
Oh, yeah, it is. It's really cute. It's really fun. It's really fun. Okay, so that's kind of like the beginning mission, just to introduce you to the team and how they work. Then they get back to their little hideout, and you pretty much get to introduce to each of the other teams. So you've got another gal there. Her name is Rose. You have the hacker. His name is Chester. And then you've got the muscle guy. And what was his name? Crap. Doyle. Sorry. So you come to figure out that this was just their first mission. This is their test mission. And they're getting set up to go on to their next one. This one, I got to show you this scene. This is really funny. Chester has built a machine where he can arm wrestle, makes him extra powerful. So he tries to arm wrestle the guy with the muscles, but it doesn't work. So he's got to go tweak it. But yeah, it's a really fun, fun comic. And of course, you get to, I guess I should talk about this. The guy who's putting them all together, Dexter, the guy that they're going after is his ex-roommate from college because they both came up with the same idea for changing the world with animatronics, prosthetics. Dexter wants to use it for good, you know, put it out there so anyone can have it. But his name's Dr. Coy, and he wants to put it on the black market and make money. So that's where their next mission is headed to. It's a really fun book. Oh, should I give the ending away? I might as well. They go, and the very last thing is they find Dr. Coy, but he has a killer baboon after him. So, killer baboons and cyber bears.
who's this by? What's the creative team on this?
This is Curtis Wise and Scott Rulchuk with Justin
Not
Scott.
Familiar. And who's the publisher?
The publisher is Image.
I thought it might be Image.
Yeah. Yeah, this is really fun. I'm definitely going to put this on my list. It's full, you know, it's got some action. It's funny. It's nothing dark, but it's creative. So I highly recommend it. I can't wait to pick it up. So brand new. It's on the shelf now. So if you want to start a new series, I highly recommend it. And then on to my next one. Of course, this is one of my favorite series that's been going on. This one is the Infestation, but it's the G.I. Joe one. This is the first of the Joes. So one of you two said you were looking through it, right?
Oh, yes, I was flipping through it, yeah.
Okay. So So, but you got to see the first two pages, right?
Yeah, I saw the preview and all the other comics. So.
Well, that pretty much gives you the feel of what the Baroness is like. If you like your typical badass Baroness, you've got to pick this up. She is cruel and just malicious, and I love it. I love it when she's when she's typical Baroness. Well, basically, what's happening in this one is they can't use technology whatsoever, the Joes, because Cobra's got them figured out. Well, someone that's new on the team decides, well, we're just using, night vision goggles. Well, they figured it out just by using night vision goggles. So Cobra attacks the Joes, and they get their secret weapon of the Joes. But they only get part of it, which you come to find out is, if you're familiar with G.I. Joes, it's like the beginning of the Bats. The Cobra's trying to make the Bats, and Joe's got their own secret weapon, but Joe's was ahead, and Baroness doesn't like that. So, but then you come to find out the lady that's trying to make the Bats, she is handicapped as well, and she is trying to use this for her own good, that she may be able to walk again one day. Well, let's just say the Baroness isn't too nice to her either, and she's blaming this all on her. So the gal that's in the wheelchair, crap, can't remember her name, but she plugs herself in, and that's how she gets the virus of the infestation. Because if you remember, both in Transformers and Star Trek 1, the virus is also goes into machines as well as humans. So because she is part human and part machine now, she's got the virus. And because she's connecting in with the rest of the system, the virus connects to all the Bats. So you have all these crazy machines going absolutely bonkers, as well as this lady. But then you come to find out that Cobra's been doing experiments, doing kind of like the last comic I did, robotics and animals. So not only do you have crazy half human, half robots and robots, you've got crazy monkeys going everywhere. So,
half robot monkeys?
Crazy robot half monkeys. Robot zombie.
Wow, that's a half robot animals is a theme with your books this week then.
Yeah, I know. So they got like all these experimental animals that they've been connected up. So, and that's basically what you see. But the thing is, at the very end, you come to realize that Joe and Cobra have to work together to make to solve this problem. So.
No.
Never.
No.
Yeah. But
not like in Transformers.
No. But like, if you like your badass Baroness, you've got to pick this up. She is mean. I love it. But it'll be interesting to see what happens in the next issue. I'm most likely, like I told you guys, it's going to be Baroness and Britt, neck to neck. And that's going to be awesome. I really love this series. It's fun.
Are you going to read the Ghostbusters one?
Oh, of course.
Yeah, maybe we'll hear about that next week.
Yeah. I'm going to probably read this series even after the minis. So,
if there is anything that they do with it, I don't know if they have any plans. So.
Afterwards, it's going to be Infestation number 2.
Well, that's the second, that's the bookend.
I'm hoping it'll continue. Because there's nothing I like better than zombies, killer robots, vampires, and
I know they advertised Infestation CVO. I think it was one shot, maybe. I haven't seen it solicited or anything. I just saw it on a list somewhere. What it is. Yeah. I think it's the one bit that they've downplayed because nobody cared. Maybe people will care now after this. You do, obviously. So that's one care corner.
It's just because it's over-the-top fun, crazy, You've got.
I think that's all anybody expected of Infestation,
Yeah.
If you went, I think that's what, in my mind anyway, what made the second issue of the Transformers miniseries succeed so well was the fact that suddenly Abnett and Lanning were going, by the way, we read those issues that everybody said were the best, and here's a load of continuity stuff tied into them that's going to have repercussions later on in the future. It delivered a lot more than I think anybody had any right to expect of Transformers versus zombies.
Well, yeah, that's probably one of my favorites for the past 2 years, the Transformers one. Yeah.
Awesome.
Pick up the series. If it comes out on trade, I'm definitely going to get it in trade so I can have them all together.
Not sure how we can expect that to be traded.
I know. I don't know if they're going to be back-to-back like each story or...
Because it's like, I mean, you would wonder if they'd be able to put them in trades together and have them there for posterity with the two different licenses sharing, you know, sharing the trade or the four different licenses or whatever.
I'll pick it up if they do that because this series is just, I've had so much fun reading it. I look forward to it each week, so.
That's all you can ask.
Yeah. Yep.
That's awesome. I'm sure they're glad. I could.
They sold me on it.
Okay, so I guess that's me. Let's see. I'm gonna talk about Brightest Day first. Sadly, the only thing I really enjoyed this week was Secret Six. So I'm not sure how upbeat my Brightest Day and Green Lantern reviews are going to be. So, let's see. Basically, people have been coming back to life and then dying, because Dead Man's been killing them. And the beginning of this, basically, it's not too far after the Aquaman gets vaporized thing, which I guess was, what, last issue? And there's just sort of a lot of picking up the pieces and people hanging around the beach and lots of stuff. Anyway, most of this issue is the Martian Manhunter stuff, which is basically just him and the other green Martian chick whose name is
Decay.
Basically just having a war of minds and a war of beating the crap out of each other.
We've really not consistently identified the Martian Manhunter stuff as some of the dullest part of Brightest Day.
Yeah, and this lives up to that
I don't know.
Idea.
I don't think this is that bad.
I don't know. I don't know. I just don't care about Martian Manhunter, I guess, and that doesn't help me any.
Fair enough.
He's not one of my favorites. Apparently
a lot of bad things are starting to happen on Earth, though. There's like this, I don't know, clouds and earthquakes and a lot of very scared people, though.
They tell us rather than actually demonstrate any of it.
Right, they just say that. Well, you see clouds rolling in with JLA at the beginning, and then...
clouds!
Yeah. But anyway, Martian Manhunter has a brilliant idea because he figures out that the Decay is basically not going to stop until she's killed everybody. That he's not going to let her destroy the Earth, just like Mars was destroyed. So he grabs her, and he flies both of them into the sun, where they burn up and die.
That sounds like a fun trip. One way and take it, right?
He pulls a sentry.
Yeah. Yes. But then he comes back, because that was his mission, and his mission's accomplished, and therefore his life's returned, and he's a big white lantern for a second. And the white light makes him choose between whether he's going to be... Yes, it's very pretty. Whether he's going to be from Earth or from Mars, essentially, it makes him choose his home. And it looks like he chooses Earth. So he comes back and starts to try to save people from the disaster and everything. And just as he starts to be awesome, guess who shows up? That's right. Dead Man. And Dead Man's like, dude, I'm so sorry that I'm going to have to wipe your ass and kill you. And Martian Manhunter apparently has figured it out.
Choose your words a little better.
Yeah, wipe your ass out. Yes. Not wipe your ass. That's a different thing. Anyway.
That's for when he's older.
Yes. Well, he's not going to make it, apparently, because he just gets swallowed by the Earth. So, I don't know. He wasn't vaporized like the others, though.
Yes, he wasn't. This is it.
He was swallowed by the planet.
It's very clear at this point that they're all fine. And it'll all turn out fine for everybody.
Yeah, it's supposed to all turn out okay, I guess. That's part of the plan.
It's like, because when it happened to the Hawks, it was because it really seemed like the ring was reacting to them denying it. But now it's become apparent that this is part of whatever it is that it's trying to do.
Yeah. But anyway, otherwise, I mean, it was just kind of... I don't know. I just don't care about Martian Manhunter, I guess.
Well, I fairly enjoyed this. You know, I thought it was pretty lovely art. I do have to say, who does the Martian Manhunter?
Especially the part, the flying into the sun part, was really epic.
Yeah, Patrick Gleason, I think, is the artist on the Martian Manhunter bit. Yeah, and it's like we finally learned that what John had to burn was decay, neither of the forests. Actually, the decay needed to be burned.
Yes.
But, I mean, ultimately, I'm kind of left asking myself, what was the point of all this?
Yeah.
Just as far as Martian Manhunter goes, you know, it's like, with Aquaman's story, we got the new Aqualad, we brought back Manta back, we reintroduced readers to where Mera came from and her people. There was a point to all of that. With the Hawks,
it ended the curse for them.
I was just struggling because I don't friggin' care. I was trying to remember. it ended their curse. You know, it accomplished something. In this, John is basically distracted for a while by some crazy Martian bitch who he then kills. And, yeah, he seems to have decided Earth over Mars. But,
well, does that... Really,
I mean, he was going to come back anyway. You know, that they have resolved an artificial situation that they created at the start of Brightest Day. You know, they only had him pick Mars at the start of Brightest Day over Earth. You know, nothing has, his status quo has not changed from where he was at the start of Brightest Day. It's all just come full circle in an extended distraction.
Well, but you know, he has been someone that sort of slipped between two worlds. And I wonder if maybe he isn't going to become the Avatar of the White Light. Yeah. I mean, is he the guardian that, you know?
That's actually winning. I win here and I win there. Now what?
Yeah,
that would be a win, actually. You know, actually, if that turns out to be the case, I will redact what I have just said, because then that would give the whole thing a point. It would truly make him embrace Earth in that new role. That would give the whole thing a point. So I will reserve judgment on the overarching Martian Manhunter story then, so we see if that turns out to be the case. That's a pretty good point.
The odds that I'm right is like zero. So how many times am I right?
By the Earth.
I'm not often that right. So anyway, so there you go. Brightest Day. How many issues we have left? This is 21. We've only got 3 left, right?
More issues.
Wow.
So, yeah. Crazy.
Now, the last issue is the double issue, right?
Yeah, it's like triple or something. It's like $5.
It should be huge. So, yay. Looking forward to that. So, War of the Green Lanterns prelude. This is Green Lantern 63. This starts off with the preview image that's been in a lot of the other DC issues, showing Krona with the other Guardians before they became very, very much the Guardians that we know of today, and then this question about Howl and his instability. And it sort of starts where it left the last issue left off, as far as, you know, Howl sort of has that memory of Clark asking him when was the last time he took the ring off, and begins with our sort of leaders of the various cores having been teleported and gathering to go try and get to go find Krona and get the avatars back, which at this point they think that the only one he doesn't have right now is the Butcher, or not the Butcher, I'm sorry, the Predator. And pretty much they get a WTF in the face opening of, nope, he's got that too, because Carol shows up and Krona, yeah, basically says, yeah, I got them all. I caught them all. Anyway.
He's a master.
Yeah, and Sinestro shows up as well. So the gang's all here.
Are they having a campout?
Yeah. But some of this issue is discussion between, you know, there's a nice moment in here where Hal kind of asks Carol about, you know, remembering what things were like before they were lanterns. And she basically says, look, when this is done, I'm peace out. You know, I'm done. You know, how long have you had the ring on, basically? And so they end up figuring out that the at least where the avatars were, is on Atrocitus's previous homeworld, which has been decimated and destroyed. And there they do find those big obelisks with the various core images on them that we had seen Ion and Parallax chained to. And when they get there, they find the Book of the Black. And they open it, and what this ends up doing is showing a sort of like a visual of something that had previously happened, in which it looks like Cronin is testing out some very early Green Lantern tech, where he's being chased down by manhunters and then reprograms them. And this is the point at which
there's so many issues with this.
Yeah, it's a little bit of a retcon, isn't it?
A little bit
of a retcon.
I know I shouldn't get hung up on it because fucking with Lantern history is what Geoff Johns has been doing since he came on. But like normally he's done it in such a way as to work around and combine all the little different elements of things to make something new. But this is flat out ignoring history. The Guardians didn't build the Manhunters until after Krona shattered reality as recompense for his actions. There shouldn't be Krona and Manhunters do not coexist. I can get behind the idea of like Krona creating the green energy. That's the implication there, is that Krona created the technology that allows the Lantern Rings to work, and that the Guardians took it and used it after. It turns out that Krona reprogrammed the Manhunters to slay everybody in Sector 666, which was another Geoff Johns creation, but it was the that was the impetus for the Guardians to decommission them and start the Green Lantern Corps instead. And the thrust of this story is that Krona was trying to prove to them that an emotionless workforce was no good. So, but he's not supposed to. Doesn't history what? When did he try to look back at the start of creation and shatter reality then? If he's still around now.
Yeah, there's a couple of things that seem interesting to me, and it almost seems like he's trying to do with Krona what he did with Sinestro, where, you know, Krona was always this, you know, it seems to be this sort of large bad guy figure, and now he's trying to sort of say, well, he's just misguided, which, I mean, is interesting, you know, I mean, obviously that's a little bit more grounded and believable. But it just sort of seems like the same thing again. I don't know. Because in a sense, like, there's one of the lines. Yeah, I mean, well, there's like a thing in here like where he talks about after they, you know, they were really pissed off of him because he slaughtered billions of people. And Krona's like, yeah, and I wept for days when I did that. And none of you have even shed a tear. But I did that for the greater good. So it's crazy and misguided, and yet, you know, he's trying to show that he's actually more compassionate than they are.
He has mastered I mean, the idea is that he has created and mastered this emotion power technology of the Green Lantern Rings, whereas the Guardians themselves have abandoned emotion. So, you know, I can see what Johns is doing with trying to credit someone else with the creation of a technology that the Guardians, by all rights, should have no concept of. But if he's throwing out JLA Avengers and Trinity, I'm gonna
well, yeah. And they're all wearing the White Lantern robes, so that's
he's gonna get a letter from Feely.
Oh, I know. No, we just do the show. That's all we need. We have the show. This is our letter. So they're all wearing the White Lantern robes. I guess we've seen them do that before. They were wearing the white Lantern symbol. But yeah. Anyway, and then the end of it's basically just a big teaser. But the final thing is that there will be only three. So the implication is one of our four Earth-based Lanterns is going to die.
John Stewart.
Yeah, I'm voting for John Stewart.
John Stewart brings nothing to the table.
Yeah, you think that's going to be the last issue? That's going to be the
Brian
last
will
issue?
Kick and scream if it's Kyle, but I don't know. Isn't
that Kyle, to be honest? I could see it being Kyle a bit more likely.
I think so, too. It's Kyle's turn, I think. Mm. I think everybody else has died.
We've got Hal. You know, they're not going to kill Hal. We're not going to kill Guy, because Guy's the one with the personality. So it really comes down to between John and Kyle, and John is the one with the mass media exposure thanks to the Justice League cartoon. John's the one who's making people who are looking at the trailer for the Green Lantern movie ask, isn't he supposed to be black? So if I suppose that when I think about it, Kyle is probably more likely.
And other than Kilby, who really cares about Kyle?
Screw you.
He's got tiger's blood. Watch out.
So I know he's gonna get me. He's gonna get me with the tiger blood. Anyway, so I don't know. I mean, we're getting. Like, my problem is that it's feel, you know, and obviously it's a transition comic, so it's supposed to be, but it just like it's got one foot in Brightest Day, and one foot in War of the Green Lanterns, and I don't know which one it's supposed to be. Mm. And like I said, with that much retcon, wow, I don't know. Cover's nice, but I don't know. I just didn't feel like it went very far.
See, we had a good run. Like, the last three issues are really good, and now you seem to be dud.
Yeah. Yeah. It was like, and because most of the middle chunk of the issue was sort of a flashback that changed a bunch of stuff. So, anyway. So, there you go. I guess we'll move on to McFeely then.
Okay, what do I got? I'm going to start with Avengers Academy this week. This week's Avengers Academy features a cover in which the Avengers Academy members team up with Doctor Strange and the Protector to fight some kind of tentacled beastie in a checkerboard landscape with the heading Magic 101. Nothing remotely resembling this occurs within the pages of this issue.
There's like, no tentacle beast?
Not even freaking remotely. It is shocking. There is
no tentacle beast.
Not
you
even
sold me. You sold me on a cover, and now you just broke my heart.
I didn't. It marveled. There is one. Hang on, where is it? I'm flipping through to make sure I have it right. There is one panel. Where is the panel? I can't freaking find it now. Yeah, there it is. Look at the page. There is one panel in which the Protector preaches them extraterrestrial culture, and one panel in which Doctor Strange teaches a magic class and studies reptiles amulet for a bit. I mean, that's it. The cover is a massive mislead. But what helps offset that is the fact that this is one of the best issues of Avengers Academy yet. So, you know, silver lining. The issue is mainly centered on Veil, who is, following last issue, one of the three students on probation for beating up the Hood and filming the result, with a subplot centered on Hazmat, who we may remember, or we may not, is the member of the team whose body is constantly secreting toxic chemicals, which means she has to live her life sealed up in a suit. But Hank Pym finds a way to give her a day off, as it were, by sending her out with Leech, who has come over from the Future Foundation to drain off her powers for a day so she can spend a day out of her suit out in the real world. While Veil, who is really the star of the thing, is really grappling with the fact that if she screws up again, she thinks she's going to be kicked out of the Academy. So every move she makes turns wrong for her. The team, in the middle of the exercise that begins the team, which is who should you save first in an emergency sort of situation, she, just running off at the mouth, asks Speedball, how do we do it? How do you do it? How do you get everyone to forgive her after you got all those people killed in... Yes, that is about the appropriate reaction. Because that is also the C-plot of the issue, if you will. It's part of Christos Gage's continuous, excellent rehabilitation of Speedball after the most... well, we don't need to go into it, but after the preposterous bullshit that character got put through for Civil War, Gage is telling a great story, trying to redeem him while still paying respect to the fact that that all happened. It's not like he turned around one day and he was Speedball again, which is, well, frankly, I don't think a lot of people would mind terribly, but he's got the costume and the code name back in Avengers Academy, but he's still struggling with what he did, and it's still shaping him. And we've seen it in earlier issues. We've seen him cut himself with the spikes on his Penance helmet, which he still keeps. And that plot thread comes to a head in this issue when Bale, trying to figure out if she should approach him to apologize, turns into mist and sneaks through his door to spy on him to check what kind of mood he's on first, so she can figure out if it's a good time to do it or not, and catches him cutting himself. And then see her do it, so then she has to live with it. Oh, what should she do? Should she tell somebody and get booted out for spying? What should she do? She is totally caught up in it. And I'm not going to give away how either of these situations resolves themselves, but it's not well. But it is a very good, solid one-shot comic with like two and three stories running parallel to one another. And it furthers... It's funny, actually, it's really good because... It's something that if you've been, you know, listening to me when I've been talking about previous issues of Avengers Academy, is that Vale has slowly been slipping back into the forefront. She was the POV character in the first issue and is probably the one character out of the six members of the team who it is the hardest to see turning bad. We've just seen her make some bad choices in the last couple of issues. But this one is just continuing that steady decline. It's like her ability to reason and her mental facilities are discorporating along with the rest of her body. Every well-intentioned decision she makes just goes wrong for her until by the last page of the issue when she does something pretty damn shocking that is going to lead to some big stuff next issue. I'm really looking forward to the next issue of the back of this. Well, she's coming out with the most preposterous rationalizations to herself as a way to make people like her and to prove herself, to prove that she deserves another chance. She's trying to do it by action rather than inaction. She's afraid that if she does something wrong, she's going to get kicked out. So it's not, instead of trying to do nothing to avoid it, now she's trying to make a big grand gesture to try and justify herself. And it is it's amazing how slowly but surely over the course of a few issues that my view on this character has flopped around. You are so damaged, love. Seriously. You need perspective. But then that's good because that's what happens with the Hazmat plot with this issue as well. Hazmat is by she's well entitled to be a completely caustic individual because she's trapped in a suit for her whole life. She can't interact with people. And this issue gives her a chance to get out of it. And it's a whole different side of the character that we haven't got to see before. And she gets to go home to see her family without telling them that she's coming. So there's a huge, massively tearful reunion. And then the bit when they think that she's cured and she has to tell them it's just for one day.
Oh.
And it totally shapes her decision. And it gives you, it's the other side of her that we've genuinely not had a chance to see yet. And I haven't felt particularly drawn to the character the way I have some others in this book. But this definitely opens up a whole other side of Hazmat. But it's just the sort of stuff that Avengers Academy does its best. So, you know, don't go into the comic expecting anything like what you see on the cover, but do go in expecting the usual level of quality that Avengers Academy presents you with. It is, in a word, as they just said in the chat, winning.
We're all about winning today.
Yep.
I was waiting to see if the sound clip would play, but it didn't.
Winning!
Yeah.
There we go.
There we go.
The other book I got this week is Axe Cop, number one. Now, Axe Cop, I learned about Axe Cop through this show randomly. I had no idea what they were talking about when I first started.
I did too.
Axe Cop is a webcomic created within the last year. He was five at the time, but he's six now. A six-year-old and his 30-year-old brother. The 6-year-old comes up with the ideas and the story, and then the brother draws it and puts it all together. It's the story of a cop with an axe. And it's not one that I've made a habit of following online, because Ender was never a big fan of it back in the day. But I don't think he's entirely wrong when he said that it didn't... I don't know how much of a lasting potential it has, but I have never made a point of following it online, just really for that reason. So I was still very much looking forward to sitting down and reading an actual full-color comic book of Axe Cop. And it is hard to describe Axe Cop, but suffice it to say that the plot of this issue involves two psychic bad guys from an evil psychic planet coming to Earth and stealing a good guy machine from Axe Cop, which turns bad guys into good guys, with the intent of rewiring it and transforming it so that they can turn it into a bad guy machine and turn everybody on Earth into bad guys, thereby creating Bad Guy Earth. And Axe Cop has trouble dealing with this because the real cops are on his tail for all of the cop laws that he has broken. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So you know what I'll say about Axe Cop? Axe Cop is freaking gorgeous.
Oh,
The
center when what's the other dinosaur's name?
Wexter.
Yeah, when he that double spread right there, I thought that looked really cute.
That's my
really
desktop
good.
Right now.
Oh, really?
Yes. Actually, I want to jump in real quick, and I just want to say one thing. Okay, Axe Cop's pretty great. I did follow the webcomic. It kind of got a little tedious for the reasons that Ender stated. But if you don't read the comic, the webcomic, this actually is it's an interesting starting point, because they're using sort of greater themes, quote unquote, as far as themes as Axe Cop goes, and they're actually upping the game. I mean, they have to. They're charging for this. But it's kind of like Axe Cop the movie. Everything's bigger and badder.
Very widescreen action.
And it's pretty awesome. I enjoyed it. I really enjoyed it. Even if you're a little tired of the meme, it's Axe Cop. The comic is definitely worth reading. It's it is gorgeous. It absolutely is.
This is the first one that I've ever read. I didn't even know there was a web. You know, this is the first time I've ever been introduced to this.
Well, you weren't confused at all by all of the heavy continuity references that they're all footnoted to this issue.
I'm pretty much going to pick it up. Well, okay, the thing is, I've been around little kids a lot, so I know how little kids play, and so I just picture this little boy playing with like this, and so I pick it up, like, because you can tell, like, things change really quickly, and that's how kids play, and so that's just how I pictured it. So...
I just love the fact that there's all these little footnote references to to concepts and little bits of story that have happened, and nothing that you need to have read to read this, obviously.
Yeah.
Just like callbacks, nothing serious. But I love the fact that the machine, which is intrinsic to the plot, is some already extant thing from a story that hasn't ever been told.
Yeah.
You know, there are plenty of bits that I just laughed out loud at this, you know, and it is artistically, you know, I read books with worse art this week.
No, this is very well done.
And he's not, and the brother is not like a formally trained artist. I mean, it's what he does, but he hasn't, as far as I understand, he hasn't actually gone to school to do this.
See, I just like the names of everything. You can tell it's a little kid, the one good bad guy that turned into a good guy, his name's Handcuff Man. You know?
Handcuff Man, no!
And then, like, the everything stick, and you can just see a little kid pretend, that's what I just see, a little kid pretending, oh, here's a stick, it can do everything, it's his everything stick, you know? It's just fun. It's cute.
Yeah, I mean, if you could approach it from that direction, you know, I don't know how anybody could have a problem with this, you know. I mean, I can certainly see how an individual regularly reading Axe Cop could grow tired of it, the same way as as the child playing could grow tired of the story they are playing, I can see how, or the parent who is forced to listen to it for hours on end will grow tired of hearing the nonsense. But if you're only periodically exposed to XCOM, or if this is your first look at XCOM, I don't know how you couldn't enjoy this, honestly. You'd have to be a real bitter, joyless type to not enjoy this, you know?
Come on, chicken's brains pop out.
And turn into robot bodies with swords.
Yeah.
Wow.
Come on, how cool is that?
There's also a really great little behind the scenes page at the end here as well.
Oh, I know.
It's a genuinely interesting look into how these things are made, and to how Malachi, that's the name of the 6-year-old, how his willingness or unwillingness to come up with new ideas or to act out the stories or to just play shape the way it is. I mean, the issue begins with a complete non sequitur in which XCOM is in a restaurant and takes a sip out of a cup of water that's sitting on a table beside him, except
that's
the
so
cup
funny.
Turns out to be alive and he's just drunk its brains and it's now stupid forever. And then it's never mentioned again. But then the behind the scenes thing explains that was something that Malachi came up with when he was actively trying to not talk about XCOM to annoy his brother in that childish way that they are. So you know, I can't say enough good things about it, honestly. Funny, innocent, it'll make you laugh, gorgeous to look at, and then the really insightful making of at the end of the thing as well casts the it just adds another layer of understanding to how the comic, to what XCOM is, you know. And I'll definitely be looking forward to the next issue of that, absolutely. If there's, you know, I said about Tiny Titans as well, but this is a different kind of joy that you need to have in your soul.
I recommend it. It's fun. It's like you said, it's innocent fun. It makes you feel like you were a kid again.
Yeah.
Like, I remember doing stuff like this. I mean, the way that he just turned the car into a spaceship all of a sudden.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure that's what we did when we were little. You're like, oh, well, we'll just make this into a spaceship.
Every so often you read a children's book or a children's comic that's written by adults, and it just seems to contain the concept that an adult thinks a child will like or would like to read about. This is like straight from the font. This is undiluted child proof. And unless you hate children. Do you? You don't hate children, do you?
Well.
I love kids. I love watching kids play. So to me, this is just really fun.
I don't like
it's children. Not for everybody, but...
That's probably why I don't like
it. Dead inside if you don't.
I don't like children, so.
You're dead inside.
Thank you. No.
You're not winning right now.
No, I am full of wind. I am. Yes. So, anyway, well, that's great. So, Secret Six is a real comic written by very adult people.
Yes.
One of them being Gail Simone.
More of a bipolar swing here.
Whoa. Yeah, talk about, we're on a whole new world here, kids. Wow. I don't even know what to say other than jump right in. So we're starting with a new story. This is, the beginning of this is a very, I sort of think of it as an homage to the Ghostbusters commercial.
They do
in the movie. Where essentially it's an advertisement being narrated by Scandal for the Secret Six, and there's like a whole deal that points out all 8 of the Secret Six.
I was wondering if they were going to say it. I was
talks about their different points. My favorite line here is the Secret Six. Your enemies are our enemies, and most of our enemies are dead. To which the director yells cut and asks, why are there 8 of you if you're the Secret Six?
Pardon, worthless one, oh mistress of the Velveteen Privates. Insignificance doesn't appear. Insignificant.
Personally, I like how they describe King Shark's job.
Yes.
Biting and shooting.
Yeah.
That's his job.
God. That's pretty great.
This wouldn't be Secret Six if you didn't, if you didn't laugh out loud at one point and then be like, "Oh shit, no!" when you turn the page.
Not even turn the page. Like the next page, just like what? Because just apparently,
tops off into his own eyeball.
Yeah, some POV random guy. Who is? Do we even know who this guy is?
I remember whenever the stripper was getting harassed in the previous issue, but I don't think it's the same guy.
No, I think it's a different guy.
That happens a lot.
And it's so messed up. He pours hot sauce in one eye and then, like, screams in excruciating pain, drags himself off of the floor, and then is like, oh, I have another eye to put it in. Wow.
For some reason, he's just wanting to know the feel of a woman instead of actually seeing her. Because he kept on saying, what was it? Make her soft or something. What was he saying? Make her soft.
There's so maybe some crazy serial killer rambling stuff in here.
Yeah.
Basically, we find out that this guy is stalking Scandal Savage's stripper girlfriend. And that's the definite B-plot of the issue, in which when Scandal has to break a date with her because they've just got back from their crossover with the Doom Patrol, she is on her own, and so she gets abducted by this guy. And it doesn't actually go any further than that in this issue. But I'm wondering if that's all there is to it, or if it's supposed to be tied into the bigger plot of the story.
Oh, I imagine she's going to show up in hell, too, and then...
Yeah, you know, they're
Scandal's
going
to have to make a choice.
Yeah, for Scandal,
So we'll get there. So this girl gets abducted. We get back to Scandal, and she's having a nightmare in which she's seeing Knockout and talking about how she's in hell, I guess, and she's not, I guess, really excited about that.
Rather nasty descriptions of hell.
Yes. Beautiful descriptions of hell in this comic. Mm-hmm. Better than...
Would you consider more of a vision than a nightmare?
It's a good question, but...
Yeah, well, I wonder how much of it is truth and how much of it is somebody doing something. There's more going on here than what we see, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's how I took it. I'm like, this is gonna come back.
Well, and the whole, the thrust of this is actually something that we've been talking about, that I think you've been talking about, McFeely, for a while, that they've had this card laying around.
From the very first story arc of the series, the Get Out of Hell Free card.
Which Scandal, I guess, at this point, decides she's going to use to bring Knockout back. And it's already gone.
She had a bad dream.
Yeah. Oh, QQ. But anyway, she decides to bring
Knockout
back. It's
the love of her life. Give her a break.
Which one? Okay, she's had...
Yeah, there is that element, you know. Honestly,
I don't
know how true their love is, you know. Scandal is not... to be honest, Scandal's never known love from anybody above her, so I don't know how she can... But I think that's part of her character, you know. She never knew love from her family, so I don't know if she really... It's like the first thing she does. She was like, oh, I've totally had this card for like a year, but I'll only use it now that I've had a bad dream about you.
Yeah,
She has no control over her emotions, because she's never known them properly, I don't think.
Yeah, I mean, and even...
Scandal walks a real, real knife's edge, you know. Because she really seems to be in control of herself so much of the time. And she's the one that is like the voice of reason an awful lot of the time. But you know, whenever you see her unleashed like she does in this issue, she goes
off the hook. So the best part is once she figures out the card is gone, she knows exactly who took it, which was Ragdoll. And she comes flying into...
Are any of us surprised with that? Any of us surprised? No.
No. So she comes bursting into his room. Now, I don't know if I have not seen these before, but he has an entire set of monkeys that are dressed up.
I don't remember the monkeys.
like other members of the Secret Six.
Yes.
And he also has his stuffed... What was that guy's name? His friend that died?
See, this is immediate. I have noticed the stuffed body of Parademon in past issues, and I genuinely wondered if that was going to factor into this story. Parademon was one of the original members of the Secret Six, and he was Ragdoll's best friend. He's just a Parademon from Apocalypse that decided to go against Darkseid. And I really wondered, whenever we knew the story was going to be about the Get Out of Hell Free card, And it was about one of the 6 years again. I was like, well, who has someone they'd want to bring back? And obviously Knockout was the first one that came to mind. But then I thought about Parademon.
Mm-hmm.
So, interesting. Yeah. Because that has happened. That Ragdoll has taken the card with the intention of bringing Parademon back.
And, wow, what a great bit for Ragdoll. Because Ragdoll has been very much a sort of behind the scenes, the odd sort of very dirty.
I don't think you could say Ragdoll is ever behind the scenes.
Not behind the scenes, but not pulling the strings, I guess. He's been
pulling all the strings.
Yeah, I mean, yes, exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly what I mean. So he's not really, and so he's mostly been there for comedic elements. And she's used that character a lot just because he says and does some of the most horrible and obscene things, but not necessarily because that character's been at the forefront. Mm-hmm. And he has this an amazing bit here in the middle where he just sort of goes off and is like,
yeah.
You know, yeah, I may be the Joker and Trickster, but I am a badass and I have things that I want and screw you and everybody.
Every once in a while, Ragdoll gets a moment like this, like that moment whenever he told them to stop picking on Black Alice and he just stood up straight. And everybody, like even Deadshot and Catman, were like, "Oh,
yeah."
And just drew back for a second. And you know, this has been a little. It's another part of it. It's another character with an aspect of themselves that they keep in check. It's like you could really believe Ragdoll would flip out and kill everybody when you see him doing stuff like this.
Yeah.
Yep. And then he gets
what is it he says? You know? Yeah, she's arguing with him over the card, and he says exactly what we've just said, you know, is that right? Your soulmate, your dearest bomb, are we all supposed to crawl up and eat because the mess of orange-headed tart you slept with a few times managed to get herself de-existed? Not to mention the fact that you went right out and got yourself a skinny replacement. Your one heart, my twisted trellis. I mean, he's so right. Yeah. Like, where does she even get off? You can't. There is nobody to side with in this argument, and that is always one of the best things about Secret Six, which is that nobody is ever right. Whenever there's a fight or an argument, some sense of disagreement in Secret Six, something that splits the team, because these are bad people who do bad things in their bad lives, no one is ever right. You just have to pick the side that you. It makes you, the reader, make your own emotional, moral judgment on this sort of thing. And there's not many books can claim that.
No. And actually, I think the better part is the top panel on that next page where... you should read that, actually. Just because I love hearing you do the voice.
I have had in my life one friend, Scandal, and when he died, I didn't go and find a skinnier substitute. I had him stuffed and mounted so we could always be together. Huh? Oh. I am killed.
Yeah.
So yep, fucking serious.
I am killed.
I don't think Ragdoll is British. I don't think Ragdoll is British, but it is how I have always envisioned his dialogue, because he speaks with Britishisms. My dear, my darling, all the rest. I am killed is so Hamlet.
Yeah, I totally see that. I can totally get on board with that.
I can see it too.
So. But yeah, she runs him through. And then there's like a moment where she's like, oh crap, what did I do?
Yeah, it's like, oh, you know, the
well, they're all like that. They're all in shock that he did that.
Yeah. So because they'd all been hanging back. They were just like, you know, letting it happen. Okay. And then he manages to pull the card, which I guess he's been keeping in dude's mouth.
Parademon.
Yeah.
Yep.
And then vanishes. Off to hell. They can't figure out. There's a moment where they have to decide whether or not they're going to go to hell. Another beautiful one-panel shot of hell here. Virgin serial killer wanted for Blight Buffet. Love that sign.
Black Alice bitches out.
She bitches out. She's like, no, I'll show you where it is, and then good luck. She didn't even say that.
There
like, I would tell you good luck, that's the bitch.
I mean, if you've been there before, you don't want to go back.
No. Don't blame her.
But again, that's the sort of thing you're not going to get from any other book.
No.
You know, that's not something a hero is going to do. This is the sort of thing that only the characters in Secret Six can sort of... And then it's like, in the middle of this morbidly hideous conversation, King Shark chirping away in the background, you know, Jeanette pipes up and says, I'll go, I'd want you all to go if my lover was there. And Deadshot's like, he's mostly dead anyway, why go to the trouble? Either way, the cards go. And then King Shark just chirps up in the background, I'll go! I want to go! And then a few panels later, it's like, wait, I want to look. Where are we going again?
Of which
I can't believe it's not
Eyeball. The best thing in that panel,
fridge.
The best thing is, it's I can't believe it's not Eyeballs. Oh my god!
Oh, the drink.
Yes, the jar of I can't believe it's not Eyeballs. Wow. Although I do love that the entrance to hell is in a mall in Iowa. I can vouch for that. I lived in Iowa.
Boy bands.
Exclusively boy bands. That's awesome.
Non-descriptive.
Yeah, the stuff in the back. Yes, I mean, it's like. God. The little commentaries.
Specialties in British cuisine.
That Gail and the artist just throw in there and just. Oh.
Truly, hell is Iowa.
Yeah Iowa was. Yeah, I lived there for a couple of years. I'm sorry, people that live in Iowa.
Not that bad.
Yeah, it was okay. the only other element of note I'll say here before, and I guess we won't mention the last panel because it's just too much fun. The last panel.
No, because there's like, there's so much going on there. It's like even who it turns out who's operating the elevator is worth keeping a secret.
Yes, exactly. So my best part is that when they get to like the elevator to hell. There's two guys standing there, and basically they say that the whole group has to pay a pound of flesh in order to go. And Catman's like, yeah, I got this. Scandal says, you know, well, no, if we're going for me, then I should pay. And he's like, no, I'm fine, I got it. It cuts off one of the guy's hands.
Keep the change, you filthy animal.
Oh, my God, it's awesome. So, anyway,
this is the next Cats in the Cradle.
Yes. I can definitely see it being that. And that's why I say, like, so many of the most recent issues have been either one-shots or they've been tie-ins with other stuff, and it's nice that we're back to an arc, a good story. And it's got...
I mean, frankly, I think that the tie-ins have been better. Since Cats in the Cradle, I think that the one-shots and crossovers have been more entertaining than our last multi-part story, which was the Reptile Brain. I still can't put my finger exactly on what it was. You know, we talked it to death when each part was coming out. We never could quite pin down why the Reptile Brain felt off. Mm-hmm. It's the swings and roundabouts. It's the two sides of Secret Six. You know, it's the side that makes you laugh, and then it's this issue. The horrible. It's the story about the horrible people doing horrible things to each other, mm-hmm. which are the two things Secret Six does the best.
Like you said, that last page, you're just like, oh, you can't wait for the next one.
I don't know what's going to happen.
Oh, it's going to go.
And Secret Six has a habit of subverting your expectations. I mean, it's what you said, DJ. It seems like a really logical sort of plot point where Scandal's girlfriend will go to hell and she'll have to choose between her and Knockout. But has Secret Six ever been that predictable as a story?
No. And that's what I mean. And that's what's the beauty of it is that, and you know, and the thing is that could be neither. You know what I mean? Like it could, you know, she could ultimately choose neither of them. You know, that's where we say it's terrible people doing terrible things to each other. And that's what makes it interesting because these aren't heroes. They're not tied to that convention. I mean, it's like you said, in a hero story, Black Alice would go. In this story, she can say, peace out, I'm not going. And you don't blame her at all. You know,
but it's even like even with Cat, I mean, this, I think this has the potential to be, while perhaps not as badass as Cats in the Cradle was, not as Liam Neeson in Taken as Cats in the Cradle was. because ultimately Catman was fighting bad people with the intention of saving his son from them, you know, a noble endeavor, even though the ending was a million times worse than even the worst scenario you could have possibly envisioned for that, where that story was heading. Jesus, that still gives me chills. This one is pure selfishness. Yeah. Pure selfishness on the part of our heroes. Nobody is more right in this argument than the other. And it has just suddenly and violently exploded into something way beyond the confines of what it should logically be, because that is the sort of personalities and emotions that Secret Six deals in.
Yeah. So, good stuff. If you're not reading Secret Six, why aren't
this
you?
This is a great this time is... to jump on if you're
yeah,
reading
yeah. Pick
this
it.
Is,
up.
Yeah. This is like with Cats in the Cradle when I get you guys to read this. This is the next Cats in the Cradle. This is the next really good jumping on point to show you what is best and worst in a best way about Secret Six. Really, if you have listened to us and you just never felt the time was right before now, for the love of God, try it with this one, because if this doesn't do it, there's no helping you.
Yeah. So awesome. Well, hey,
I mean, Gail Simone tweeted to a review of this one, which she said she thought contained her favorite opening sentence of anything ever. I can just read that sentence to you now. It's, if you've ever thought that women shouldn't write comics, you should go fuck yourself.
Yes. Yes. And yeah, I mean, yeah. And just to say that this is not a comic that is good because it's written by a woman, and we're just saying that. I mean, Gail Simone
no,
is just
crazy.
No, it's an awesome comic.
So
consistently one of the best books that DC puts out, and one of the I don't really know what Secret Six sells, but obviously it's enough to keep it around. Whenever you see DC's gone through a little rake of cancellations in the last month, we've lost Rebels and Freedom Fighters and Batman Confidential and some other things I can't even remember because nobody cared. But Secret Six has stuck in there. It's a real fan favorite, and it's a consistently underrated comic that deserves to be selling a lot more than it is, but it's nice to know that it's at least recognized. And if we can do something to spread the recognition of Secret Six, I feel our job is done.
Yes. A Great job that we do every week here on the Tape Radio Network. Again, we want to mention Comic News International, comicnewseye.com. They post all of our stuff there. Actually, now I'm posting it there. It's pretty awesome when I remember to do that. Sorry, Brian. anyway, we do this show live every week. That's Sunday at 4:30 Eastern. Please join us. We love having you on the show. You can listen along with us, comment, everything. Don't forget to go to tfradio.net. That's where all the shows on the TF Radio Network are. And there's a lot of them, probably for stuff that you like as well. If you like more than comic books, there's other stuff as well. Transformers, Power Rangers, all kinds of awesome stuff. I think that's it. I think that's the show.
Yeah, anything that's it for this week.
Yeah, it's a good show. Shorter show this week.
We don't have triplet.
We're Stan the Man.
Yeah, we're down triplet. So see, it's not my fault.
And I cured my brain.
Yes, I did.
Well, we do have another guy sitting over there.
So see, the show is long, not my fault, but rather triplets. So
you borrow my brain for 5 seconds and just be like, dude, can't handle it. Unplug this bastard, yeah.
Yep, that's what I think as well. So all right, anyway, everybody again, thank you for joining us. Thank you for listening, and please tune in next time, when it will be Fanboy versus...
This has been Fanboy versus... with your hosts, J.D. Church, Chris McFeely, Chris Triplett, and Brian Kilby. Visit us at tfradio.net for show notes and to subscribe to the podcast. Follow us on Twitter at TF Radio for news and updates. Like the podcast? Leave us feedback on iTunes. Copyright 2010, Radio Free Cybertron.